You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to the Here District. I am the captain, the captain of the special, Marcus Johnson, joined by my first mate, my son, Chris Johnson. And today we have a very special guest, one of the most iconic figures in Bucks basketball lore. And not just because of his Bucks and Six famous quote saying, but man, he dropped like 55 points, I believe, in a game.
55! Double nickels.
So look, Chris, I got this list of questions that, you know, Tony, one of our producers, Johnny Watson from the Bucks, hooked up for me to ask Brandon, but I don't need this. You know, it's three LA guys talking basketball, man. Brandon, welcome to the Here District, man.
Oh, man, thank you. Thank you, man.
Appreciate it, brother.
It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, man. And legend, like I say, man, you were, in terms of just in the Bucks and Six thing, that's number one. But I want to get back to your days, like, in Compton and growing up. Dominguez Hills, you started out with, but growing up, who were the guys that, you know, the ball players that were guys that you looked up to kind of coming up?
Man, growing up in L.A., you know, it's a lot of hoopers. You know, L.A. County is big, but, you know, I would just have to say, like, going to the Real Run, going to the Drew League, back when it was the middle school, you know, the Real One was in Carson, you know, so being able to see Baron Davis, Paul Pierce, and being able to go up to UCLA and play when I was young, you know, against the older cats is, you know, I think just everything about LA basketball right there is just like, you know.
See, people don't know about that Real Run. De'Anthony Langston, you know, he's the guy that put
Shout
that
out
on.
D-A.
Yeah, and that's kind of a lower level kind of pro league, but I remember a Real Run game. I think, Chris, you were playing too when Antoine Walker showed up at halftime with no shoes.
42. And dropped 42 four, piece in the second half.
See, that's the real.
Yeah, see, that's hoop.
See, people don't understand. You know, that's what the Real Run is all about.
Yeah, that's the stuff I remember. Like, guys coming in the gym, like you said, halftime, or being at the Say No. When the Say No used to be up there, you see Jordan Farmer, Marcus Williams, Pooh Jeter, all those guys up there, going at each other. And I was, like, young, so, like, those are all, like, you know, icons to me.
Yeah, and when did you realize, man, that you maybe you always realize it, but when did you really feel like I can play on this level? Not only just play, but I can excel on this level.
I have to say 13 and under nationals in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
Went down there with South Coast All-Stars, played for Scott McClain, and we went down there and won with Malik Story and DeMar DeRozan and everybody. So,
okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
When we won that tournament, I was just like, yo, like, you know, 13 going in eighth grade was like, all right, like, you know, like, yeah, like, I got a chance at this.
Malik Story, Artesia, right?
Yes, sir.
Played with James Harden.
Yes,
played with, who was the big boy?
Sidney.
Renardo Sidney, 10th grader, 6'10".
God.
Thought he was
going to
be just a can't miss. It's interesting how some guys fall through the cracks like that. You know, you just can never predict. You can try to, but you can never really predict who's going to excel, who's not.
Yeah, I mean, Renardo Sidney in the 9th, 10th grade, I mean, he could play all five positions. I mean, he was, like, you know, he was part of that AAU team that we had with Kevin Love when we went 38-0. So, I mean, he was a big part of that.
UK Love and who else?
Me, K Love, Daniel Hackett that went to USC.
Right.
Malik Story, Taylor King.
Okay. Taylor King, legendary, modern day. You know, he's another guy that we kind of thought would be kind of one of these can't-miss lottery 12-year NBA career dudes, man. Yeah. Yep. So.
And that was with Southern California All-Stars, right?
Yes. Yes.
With PB and those guys?
Yep. Pat Barrett.
Okay.
Yeah. Pat Barrett, Kelly Williams.
Yeah, y'all had a crew, man. Yeah. Y'all had a crew, man. They all had a crew, for sure.
Okay, so then so you go into high school, Brandon, and then you go to Dominguez for two years. Freshman through junior year?
Freshman through sophomore year.
So then it was time to go to a bigger stage. Well, what went into that decision, and talk about that experience?
Yeah, well, Dominguez, you know, I always knew I was going to go to Dominguez because I used to be the ball boy for Dominguez back in the day when Tyson Chandler was there.
Okay.
So my history with the program was always there. So it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of like, yo, you're going here regardless, like no matter what. So, and then, like, after the 10th grade year, you know, if in L.A., they have this place called the Home Depot Center. When they first built it, it was a place where we go train. So it was like cross training. And ever since then, when I started there at the 10th grade, my game was just elevating and elevating. And I wanted more competition. You know, I just felt like the competition in the summertime was so high that, you know, when I once the summer stopped, you know, coming back to the L.A. playing in your league, you know, you're playing against GAR, you're playing against Paramount, you know, all these schools. And it's like, you know, it wasn't. It was weak. So
GAR had some solid players.
GAR, I mean, Casper Ware went there. To GAR. So,
yeah, okay. For sure.
But yeah, I just felt like the competition at Oak Hill was just. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, we played a college schedule. We played 45 games a year, and, you know, we only played 12 home games. So, you know, the competition and the atmosphere I was getting from there was, you know, on a whole nother level.
Steve Smith, the coach?
Yes, Steve Smith. Just retired. I mean, retired.
Did he?
Too.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So now Oak Hill.
Legend.
Explain that dynamic. I mean, did you have to go to the academics? Did you have to go to class? I mean, it was demanded that you fulfill some academic requirements. Was it mostly just about basketball? What was that about?
Man, it was a wake up call. Honestly, I was 16. You know, getting everything I wanted. I mean, come on. You know, 16, getting everything, playing for SEA. You know how that goes. Yeah. AAU. Yeah. You know, we get whatever
Please.
We want.
Southern California All Stars, Pat Barrett, lacing them.
Shout out PB.
Nike sponsor.
You know how that. But no, man. I mean. You know, being 16, away from home, you know, I want to commend my mom for even giving me the opportunity to go there because that was something I really needed growing up without a father figure, of course. But, yeah, I had to go to school every day, you know, sometimes Saturday school, go to church on Sundays. We had to have uniform. We had to have curfews and things like that. So it was definitely something that I needed, and man, I really appreciate it.
So there was a spiritual element, you know, because, see, I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
I thought y'all just down there hooping every day and just, you know, all day, every day, and that was it.
You know, it's a Baptist school.
Okay, cool. So, good.
It was cool.
And who did you play with at Oak? any guys that kind of did big time things in college or pro?
Oh yeah, Nolan Smith.
Okay,
The first year I got there, me and Nolan Smith was in the backcourt together.
His dad, Derek Smith, was a teammate of mine with the Clippers, Louisville, the Rock, we called him. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so Nolan Smith, and you guys were the backcourt?
Mm-hmm, me and Nolan Smith. And the crazy, like, you know, Nolan was there before me, so, you know, Nolan don't know this, but my work ethic changed when I saw Nolan.
Wow.
Because, you know, he was already there a year ahead. You know, I thought I worked hard. I thought, you know, getting in the gym, you know, when we can, but it's like, you know, he was in the gym every day. Because that's all we had. So he would get up at 5, 6, go work out, and he was just like, yo, once that season starts, you better be ready. So, you know, he really helped me.
Yeah, you know, his speech, he's got that overbite like his dad, Derek. It's like, his dad, hey, what's up, Mark? Hey, man, what's up? And Nolan kind of reminds me of his dad. I love Derek Smith, man. Derek Smith, just to, you know, just digress a little bit, with the Clippers, out of Louisville, they wanted him to play power forward at 6'6", got up to about 245, realized he was more of a two guard, got his weight down, work ethic, worked on his game. I'm telling you, Brandon, my first or second year with the Clippers, I forget which one, but he was averaging like 29 points a game. He was the second best two guard in the league behind Michael Jordan. And when they locked up at the sports arena, was it Mike's rookie year, maybe right around that time, 86 or so? But Derek and Mike, Derek had 33, Mike had 35 and 36, going back and forth. So, I mean, you bring that name up, Nolan Smith, it just brings back fond memories. All right, so Oak Hill, you guys do what? You guys win the
national championship.
Okay.
Yeah. So, national championship.
Lose any games?
Yeah, we went 40-1. We lost to Derek Rose and them on ESPN.
Simeon?
Yeah, Simeon. I mean, I don't know why Coach scheduled that game. I mean, we had no chance of winning that game in Chicago. I mean, it was 8-5. They already knew what it was, but we ended up being national champs at the end, and you know, that was crazy because I had just came off the 38-0 summer to going 40-1 in my high school season, so I was just going crazy that whole junior year.
And what were you averaging? How much did you have the freedom to really express your offensive game like you could there at Oak Hill, or was it more of a team structure, a combination of both? What was that about?
No, it was guard heavy. My first year, I averaged a double-double. I averaged like 15 and 12. I was on my Kenny Anderson. Like, I love Kenny Anderson growing up. So I was
on
my
left. I can see that.
And then my senior year, everybody had left, and then that's when I averaged 37.
Okay.
So I just took it up.
What colleges were in on you at the time? And obviously, you took a different route, but I was curious about who was, like, really recruiting you heavy and what colleges you might have wanted to go to.
Yeah. So, you know, I verbally committed to USC in the 10th grade.
Ah, okay.
At first. Right. So I committed to USC because Tim Floyd was there and, you know, O.J. Bell was going. So, you know, everybody was like, oh, like, you know, USC. And then I had decommitted from there. And then UConn in Arizona was on me heavy.
Okay.
So I was going to go to UConn because Marcus Williams went there.
Right. Crenshaw. Yeah. Y'all dog. Oak Hill too, right? Yep.
And then Arizona, I wanted to go to Arizona because Luke Olsen, you know, point guard you.
Yeah.
I felt like I could be able to play my game. You know, Salim Stoudemire went there. Gilbert, Mike Bibby, like, you know, all went there. So those were the schools that I was really interested in. And that was on me heavy.
And what made it – when did your focus shift over to Italy and being a pro? Like, how did that – take us through that process of your thought process behind that.
Well, Luke Olsen, he had retired. So when he retired, and that kind of like – that kind of had me like kind of sourly. I was like, like, you know, then Chase Budinger was there, Jordan Hill, Gerald Bayless was there. I was gonna go because Gerald Bayless was going to come back. But then when he left, I was like, all right, like – you know, I don't know this new coach or anything like that. So we decommitted from there. Me and my mom were in traffic listening to Clay Thompson's
Michael Thompson
talk. And Sonny Vaccaro gets on the phone. Sonny Vaccaro's like, yo, I don't know why these kids just don't sit out for a year, go overseas or work out. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, do something different. Make the NCAA, you know, force their hand. And I'm like, well, I'm like, mom, like, you hearing this? Like, yo, we should call Sonny. Like, we should get on the phone and call Michael Thompson. So we knew Michael Thompson because Clay played for Southern California All-Stars, and the connection there hooked up with Sonny. Next thing you know, I'm in Vegas. I'm working out at the Impact Center.
Impact?
Yep, yeah. I'm working at Impact Center, going against all the guards and everything. The next thing you know, I signed to Italy, and then I signed a deal with Under Armour, all in a week under Sonny Vaccaro.
Wow. Joe, what's the guy's name at Impact? I can't say
his
Budazar. But yeah, I had a couple of sons that went down there. So all that, people understand, man, just when you're in those situations, I mean, that, like you talked about, working out at the Home Depot Center, I always think, Brandon, about how overseas they have the great developmental process with their younger players. But actually, just hearing you talk, Joe Budazar, the Home Depot, I mean, you know, Southern California, Vegas, starting to kind of catch up a little bit to some of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, what saved me was, like I said, the Home Depot Center, that training. That ninth and 10th grade year when I was working on my body and just doing different things, I was, like, coming back between the legs, dunking. Like, that's why my hoop mixtapes were crazy. Like, because, you know, I was really focused on, you know, my body and trying to take it to the next level.
But you were always quicker than everybody. I mean, your quickness was always there, right? It was just a question of getting some strength, getting a little bit more athleticism. But, man, in terms of just all-time quickest in the history of Southern Cali basketball, you'd be one of the top
five. Pound for pound.
If you had to name all quick team of guys that you just watched or played against, who would you put on that top five, all quick, just all quick?
Just quick? AI for sure.
Allen Iverson.
Who else was quick? Ty Lawson?
Yeah. Funny story. So I went to see Ty Lawson in L.A. They played against Compton High, or somebody like that. They came to town. So I went to see Oak Hill. Ty Lawson, I heard all about Ty Lawson. Yeah. Came away impressed with you-know-who. Kevin Durant was on that team. He was like a junior on that team.
Yeah, they played at Cerritos College.
Yeah.
I was there. Yeah. I was a freshman. I was there. And that's what made me want to go there. I was a freshman sitting there. I was like, yo, this Oak Hill team is nice. Like, they got Jordans. Yeah. Like, they missed school.
Oh. who did they play, Compton or Centennial? Somebody like that. They played one of those two Compton schools. But so I went to see Ty Lawson, and then this big, high-waisted, long-armed, 6'7" kid reminded me a little Scottie Pippen, was a junior, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. And I went to him after the game. I was like, man, what's your name? He's like, you know, Kevin Durant. I said, you got a chance to do some big things in this game, man. Keep working hard, bro. And he remembers that when he won the Wooden Award. He reminded me of that. So, yeah, but Chris mentioned the Italian experience, Sonny Vaccaro.
Yes.
Now, all of a sudden, whirlwind. Talk about Italy. How old are you? 18?
I was 18. At 18, I took my mom and brother.
Okay.
Which was a great experience for my brother, for sure, because he went to an Italian school, so he was like one of the class presidents there. And so his experience as a kid was great. I got to play alongside Andre Hudson, that went to Michigan State. Alan Ray, that went to
UConn, right? No.
No, I think he went to
Villanova. Villanova. Yeah.
So, you know, I had those guys as my teammates. I played against Earl Boykins. I played against Travis Best. I played against a bunch of guys that were nice. But just the experience alone, man, was something that I needed. And it was another challenge.
Yeah.
You know, another challenge. Like, I went from Compton, Dominguez, to Oak Hill, to Italy. So wow. I just kept taking challenges, and, you know, I was answering all of them.
Have you read the book, or done anybody approach you about writing a screenplay about all this, man? Have you ever? We'll talk later.
Yeah, I definitely need a movie, but I mean, I'm still going. You know, life after basketball now, tough crowd. So it's like it's just still going.
Right. And so just quickly, the who'd you play for in Rome? What was the team?
La Domotica Roma.
Okay. And
okay. Yeah.
In terms of starting, or did they try and kind of, you know, feed you a little bit at a time? Did they throw you right into the fire? How was that handled over there? How did you do in practice? Were you one of the dominant players? Did you feel, or was it an adjustment? You know, all that good stuff. Talk about that.
Well, coming from America, being a number one player, you know, I thought I was going to come in and just play, which I got a reality check right away. And it was something that I did need. I was able to work on my game a lot. I didn't play a lot, but the practices and the overtime that I put in, you know, have you ever played overseas?
Played 1 year.
You know, so you know how those practices are. Like, it's two a days, never a day off play, probably play like once or twice a week. So, but just being able to, you know, I love the fact that they made me go through things mentally, because it also showed how strong I was in being able to, you know, just see the game from a different angle at that time.
Yeah, it's funny because I was over in a small town near Venice called Udine. And, you know, it was D2 at my last year. I'd been out of the league 2.5 years and in a shell of my former self, as Howard Cosell would say. But I'm still able to put up 25 a game over there. Chris was there. Josiah was there. They were playing for the younger teams, the youth teams, and killing. And I think that really helped their development. But so the language barrier. You know, so we play a game the night before on a Wednesday night or whatever. Thursday morning, I'm home, sleep, chilling, just go kick it all day, knock on the door. Yeah, what? It's the coach, assistant coach. We have practice. We have workout. We have practice. You need to come to the coach this year. I think we got practice tonight. Yes, tonight too, but we have practice. And then weightlifting at noon. I'm like, man, you guys are killing me with this, man.
Two-a-days.
Yeah.
Two-a-days, and they don't care.
And just to segue a little bit on Italy, man, you know, we would stop. So Chris, my wife at the time, Josiah's mother, Jocelyn, she was there. Chris, my youngest son, my third son, Joshua, was over there, just a baby. But we stop at these out-of-the-way trattorias in the middle of the night, coming home from a game or whatever, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, and they would throw on some sausages on the grill. I mean, I never had a bad meal the whole time I was there.
The food was off the chain. The food in Italy is unbelievable. I was not complaining.
Yeah, and then I had a teammate, Lorenzo Bettarini. You remember the Capitan, Chris? Lorenzo Bettarini.
Of course, we had a farm. Of course.
And he grew this. He made this strawberry wine called Fragolina that was 33% alcohol, and I was buying it by the cases and drinking it by the cases. Man, I like to say I ate and drank my way out of Italy. Man, I had a great time over there. Yeah. But you had overall a good experience. And
man, I drank a lot of wine.
Yeah.
Saw a lot of beautiful women. Playing in some hostile, playing some hostile environments.
Yeah.
For sure. I went crazy shopping and just living at 19
Rome.
Years old
in Rome. In Rome.
You know, at the Vatican, at all times.
Went in Rome, baby.
Yeah, went in Rome.
Do as the Romans do. The clubs, everything was popping and cracking over there. Was there an age limit? Did you get carded? You have to like pull some.
I didn't get carded. Yeah. I mean, I was 19 drinking wine.
Yeah.
Like I said, though, the women, whoo.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. No. And your teammates were cool. Teammates, were there any saltiness going on? Hey, it's Americano, young boy.
Jealousy.
Come over to you. Hey, hey, hey.
They
try to put you through some hazing or whatever just to play you more. You tell me, play you more physical. What was that about?
No. I mean, I got embraced. I mean, you know, I think, you know, the people I had behind me, Sonny, Under Armour, you know, all the support I had, the support system was great. I had some great vets, had some great guys that I played over there with, you know, has been over there forever. That's, you know, they were just telling me I was going to be fine and just keep working hard.
So without getting into specifics, Under Armour, six figures, high, low six figures. I mean, just
Meal ticket in the mill. In the mill,
was
right?
It? Seven figures?
Yeah, seven figures.
Ooh,
yeah.
Oh, you 18? With a ticket?
Yeah, I got 1.2 out of high school.
Ticket.
Oh, my goodness.
Please.
Yeah, 1.2. Yes, I mean, now, if I was coming out today, it'd be different. You know,
but
about
still.
Four,
well, I mean, what, but when you're 18, 1.2, I mean,
yes,
what was that?
Yes.
I mean, what was that like? What? Tell me, what was that about? What was that like? I mean, just...
Just, I mean, the whole process was just crazy. Like I said, I went to Vegas for a week with Sonny. You know how Sonny gets.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
start,
yeah.
When
I
he kiss you on the cheek and, you know, he tell you, that's when you know you in there.
Pam, like, Sonny in. And Pam. Yeah, Sonny, yep, I love it. I love it. Yep.
Just the whole week, like, man, it went from, it was like on some Godfather stuff.
Right,
it was
right.
Like, you know, had an Italian dinner at this nice restaurant at the Wynn. And then, you know, next thing you know, I'm sitting there talking to Dan Bordarota, one of the great European players, the one that did the, you know, they call the Sham God.
Yeah,
you
oh,
know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Dejan Bordarota.
So that was my first GM. So he came.
What, he was doing the Sham God before Sham God, or
yeah.
He hit Melo with the move in the Olympics. Remember?
I didn't know that.
In the Olympics, so in 2004, they call it the El Latigo. They call it the El Latigo over there.
No, for real.
It's the Bordarota. It's the Bordarota. It's the Bordarota, buddy.
That's a basketball history. So that was your GM over there.
Yeah, that was my GM. And he was so excited about the idea. You know, it was new. It was something different. He was like, yo, this is going to change. Like, this is going to change forever. Like, we're going to be able to get more kids. We can help you develop. You'll be playing against grown men. It'll be hostile environments, but it'll be something good for you. So,
And that was kind of the precursor to... Baisley, I know, did a similar thing. I think Mitchell Robinson didn't go to his college scholarship to Western Kentucky or somewhere. Just kind of worked out on his own. Shoe deals kind of supported Baisley, Darius Baisley, when he came out of high school. So you were kind of the first,
kind of a
trailblazer, just in terms of that whole approach, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then you had Melo Ball that did it after me, the Ball brothers.
Yeah,
you know, they took it to a whole nother level with their dad. But
started his own league.
But I mean, man, you know, like I don't ever regret the situation. I don't ever regret what I've done. You know, as far as like helping the game and giving kids another, you know, angle to make money and play the game of basketball, because overseas, you know, they've been making money since they were 15, 13, 14 years old.
Absolutely.
A lot of these guys been pros since forever. So, you know, we want the same opportunity.
So now you come to Milwaukee. Where were you drafted? Did you know the Bucks were going to draft you? Had they shown a lot of interest? Was it John Hammond at the time? Who was calling the shots?
Yeah, John Hammond was calling the shots. But Scott Skiles, man, I think Skiles really liked me a lot. And that was the part of the development overseas that people didn't know. Like, I was working out after practice every day, working on, you know, things that would happen in these NBA workouts, coming off the pick and roll, you know, spot shootings and, you know, all these things, how to make decisions early. And I really caught the eye of Scott Skiles early.
Right. Did that general manager, the Sham guy dude, was he cool in helping you in terms of development? Did he give you some input in terms of, you know, just a guy that's been around and played internationally, a veteran guy?
Mm-hmm. Just a lot of it was just being patient. You know, at 18, 19, you want your way. Like, you know, you want your way. You got Under Armour. You got all these commercials, you know, everything. But it was just about being patient.
Yeah.
You know, I had a great coach over there. He was on me every day. But yeah, everything was about patience and timing.
Yeah, yeah. And
what other teams were involved? Like when you first got on that radar, you're over in Italy working out. Like, were the Bucks the first call, or were there some other teams interested as well? Was there some type of, you know, behind the scenes stuff going on? People wanted to draft you, or was it Bucks all the way?
No. I didn't know anything about the Bucks until I actually went and worked out for them. But nobody was really on my radar but the Knicks. At first, like the Knicks had the seventh spot, so I just remember killing that workout, and I killed the Bucks one.
Wow.
So I just knew for sure I was going between 7 and 10,
somewhere
like that. But no, I mean, you know, NBA scouts used to come to our practices all the time. So, you know, a lot of NBA scouts were seeing me in practice, which I was dominating practice. Like, you know, practice you couldn't, you know, it was ugly. Like I was going crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
and when you had the workouts, who did you go against? Other guys that they were looking at, other prospects, quote unquote, or was it just by yourself? Do you remember who you were working out, kind of going against, and kind of what that was like? That intensity between two guys trying to impress and trying to show what they can do.
Yeah, no, I worked out for like almost 13 teams, and I wasn't ducking no smoke.
Okay,
See, because, you know, I didn't play for the whole year. So the Blake Griffins and everybody was getting their college love and, you know, the diaper dandies and all that. You know, I was the one coming back, the kid from Italy coming back. Let's see if it worked.
Right.
So I was on a mission.
But who, any guys that you can remember going against in those workouts where it was particularly intense and y'all were kind of talking, you know, you're from Compton. I've seen your work. The verbal is just as much a part of it as the physical, but yeah,
we gotta go like Johnny Flynn.
You
know, he was in some workouts. Steph was in some workouts. Tariq Evans.
Steph Marbury.
No, Steph Curry.
Okay.
Yeah, Steph
okay.
Curry.
Okay. And what was your impressions? Did you foresee who he would become based on going at him in a workout situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, he can shoot the ball. I mean, that's the thing. Like, he can shoot. Like, you know, when you can shoot the ball, I mean, you know, you're deadly.
Handle was as tight as now, or it was still a work in progress?
It was still a work in progress.
Okay.
Still a work in progress. Who else was the one person I did get in trouble for saying something about? I said something about Ricky Rubio not working out at all.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of. I think that was one of the reasons why my draft stock had kind of went down a little bit, because I was like, well, where's Ricky Rubio at? Like, why he not here, like, working out? We out here, you know, busting our asses and we doing all this and he ain't here. Like, what's going on? Like,
where's Ricky?
Yeah. So okay. I kind of got in trouble for that a little bit.
So you get to Milwaukee, drafted by the Bucks at 10.
Where'd you, 10
by the Bucks. And what was that? You go from Compton to Rome to Milwaukee. Now you're here with the brutal winters. Mm-hmm. I got some stories about my first two winters in Milwaukee, man. But just the overall, I mean, what was your feeling like? I mean, did you bring mom and brother with you to Milwaukee? Did you come on your own? And what was that adjustment like for you? You were 19 at this point, 19, 20
at this 19, point. 19, 20. So, and also to go back a little bit, the McDonald's All-American game.
Yeah.
Was in Milwaukee. I think a year from then. So my high school. So I was already in Milwaukee. Went to Italy, came back, and got drafted to the Bucks.
Okay, so you've been here. Okay.
Yeah. I had been here for like, you know, a couple of days.
Right. Who else was on those McDonald's rosters? Just quickly. I mean,
Drew Holiday, Kemba Walker, okay. DeMar DeRozan.
Wow.
Greg Monroe.
Okay.
Iman Shumpert.
Yeah. Loaded.
Yeah, it was Drew Holiday. Yeah, it was
a crew.
It was loaded. Yeah.
Okay. And then the Bucks. Now, right away, so Scott Skiles is your coach.
Mm-hmm.
Just what was that adjustment like? Playing was for Skiles, playing, being a professional. Who's on the team? You got two, Larry Sanders. And
My rookie years, me, Michael Redd, Bogut, Carlos Delfino, Bell, Charlie Bell.
Charlie, Michigan State, sure,
uh-huh,
yeah.
Luke Bamute.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We had a bunch of Kurt Thomas, Jerry Stackhouse.
Oh yeah, some good solid vets. Okay.
Yeah, we had some good solid Luke Rittenauer.
Yeah, and how were they towards you? Was there any haterism going on? Was it all good, all brotherhood, basketball brotherhood type stuff? What was that about?
No, it was cool. I mean, you know, I did a lot of talking early before I got there, so I had to really come in there and prove myself. Like, you know, I was still at that Compton LA in me. Like, right. I was more like, man, don't think it's sweet because I was over there, like, you know, averaging 5 points or whatever. But man, it was cool. I mean, you know, being under Skiles, you know, him being on me every day. You know, he's very detailed and dialed in. So every day, like, you know, we were watching film, and even after my 55-point game, we had to watch film the next day, and he was like, "Hope you don't think you're hot. Like, you ain't did nothing yet."
Right.
Like, you know, and it was just those things that I need to hear.
55 as a rookie? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So
the record it's the Bucks rookie record, right? Was it?
Well, I would hope so. But Kareem, I mean, yeah, but yeah. 50. I knew you had 50. You know, I knew the Bucks. I didn't realize that was your rookie year. Wow.
Yeah.
Come on.
And we'll walk us through that. I mean, who was that against? The Pistons? Who was that against?
No, it was against the Warriors.
Against the Warriors.
Yeah, the Warriors.
Okay.
They were going under on me the first. It was Rico Hines. Y'all know Rico, right? Yeah. Shout out.
Of course.
Yeah. Rico. So that was Rico's scouting report.
Can't shoot. He can't shoot.
Yeah. You know Rico.
No guard him out there, man.
Yeah, you know Rico.
He ain't got nothing.
Yeah, you know Rico.
Yeah.
So Rico. So I'm like, okay, Rico. He was like, so at halftime, Rico like, we own you. It's my. I was like, all right, bet.
What'd you have at halftime?
I had 10 points at halftime. Right? I had 10 points, you right? Had 10 and then Rico, like, yeah, we own that young fella. I'm like, all right, bet. 34 in the third. All right, woo. Bet.
Woo. You had 34 in the third.
Yeah,
How many threes? You remember how many threes out of
eight?
Eight threes in one quarter.
Yeah.
As a
Who was guarding you in the majority of those buckets, B? Who's guarding you? Do you remember?
Nobody.
I don't remember. I just know they kept going under and trying to switch, and I was like, man.
Casper the Friendly Ghost. Yeah. Nobody. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so 55. Then what? I mean, that had to be just like, you know, just blown up tremendously in the media. I mean, after scoring 55, I mean, what did that do to you? I mean, just in terms of your confidence, yeah. and it had to do something in terms of just juicing you up as an NBA player.
I mean, I really didn't have time to, like, soak it in or dial in because, you know, the next, you know, scouts and, you know,
think,
the bets.
Don't think you had hot crap.
You know, the bets I have, like Kurt Thomas and all those guys, like, they wasn't letting me just sit up there and be like, all right, like, next game.
Good for them.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what are we doing next? Like, so, and we ended up making the playoffs that year. We were fifth. I think fifth or sixth, like we were like 10 games over 500 that year. Like, wow. So it was, you know, it wasn't no time to really celebrate. I wasn't able to really dial it in.
Okay. And let's go to kind of what you're most famous for. Was that your rookie year, the Bucks and Six, the whole thing? What year was that? And I've heard the story, but you tell me, did you really, that was against LeBron, right?
Yeah. So it was my last year here, but so during a regular season, I think we played well against them.
Okay.
Like you know what I'm saying? We actually played really well against them during the season. And then, I mean, you know, I'm looking at it like, okay, champs, eighth spot. Like, you know, hopefully we get one or two. You know, why not go win in six?
Right.
You know,
okay.
So, you know, I mean, I ain't going to say we're going to lose the series. Like, you know what I'm saying? Well, I'm supposed to say, hey, you know, nah, I mean, we just going to get, you know, just going to get swept and gone and, you know.
Please.
You know, whatever. It's like, nah, man, we're going to try to fight and get this thing in six.
Yeah. And when did that take off? Did right away or was it, I mean, when you said Bucks and six, is that? You talk about that.
No, I didn't take off right away. Actually, didn't come back in what 8 years? 8 years from then?
Really?
Like, yeah. Okay. I'm about to say, yeah, it died. It died after that. Like, okay. The Bucks and Six died for a whole, seven years until they won that game five. And then next thing you know, I'm getting a phone call from all the fans and the Bucks like, yo, we about to win in six. Like, yo, B. Jennings, you got to get here. I'm like, yo, what?
Game five of what series? What series was that?
This is against Phoenix.
Oh, so just the
2021,
the championship year.
Yeah, 2021. Wait, no. I think it was the series that they won before that
against New Jersey. Nah, Hawks.
The Hawks, right? Okay. They beat the
Eastern
Hawks
Conference
in six.
Finals. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Then they beat the Hawks in six, and then they won. Yeah. So I think it was once the Hawks.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Okay, so I didn't realize that it died a slow death, and the temporary death that got resurrected.
Oh yeah, it died. Yeah. We had to go back and dig it. We had to go back and dig it up.
Well, that's funny because I was in Phoenix. For the first two games that we lost in Phoenix, got down 0-2, and the Phoenix fans were going crazy. What do you think is going to happen now? And I was just like, hey, Bucks in six. We're going to win this in six. And everybody, and I didn't know if I completely believed that, but it was all about what you had said and that famous saying. And in terms of you, that era of basketball and Bucks basketball, how do you think that impacted the Milwaukee basketball culture, the Milwaukee Bucks fan base, in terms of where the team was at that point? I mean, you know, you're this exciting young player, 55 points. Just that era of Bucks basketball, what do you recall about that?
Well, I mean, it was down at first. I mean, you know, the Bucks didn't make the postseason for like almost eight seasons, so it was kind of down. So to come in and bring some energy, I mean, that whole year I had like the high top, I had the Gumby. I mean, I was, you know, trying to market myself as much as I could. Yeah. And, you know, me having those early games and having success was able to, you know, put the Bucks on the, you know, the map. A little bit, you know, we ended up having national games, ABC, TNT games, and things like that. So, you know, I was, you know, for the time that I was here, for those 4 years, I was able to, you know, leave my mark, my stamp.
Right. And so I would think when you look back at your Bucks career what stands out the most? Is it the 55-point game? When you think about your Bucks career, your time in Milwaukee, what really jumps out at you more than anything else, Brandon?
My time in Milwaukee, I would say it was a kid, you know, coming to a city, searching for, you know, searching for excitement, searching for something new. And Milwaukee was everything I needed at the time. Like, it was the city where I first heard my first cheers. You know, go to Carnivores, go to Else's. I think it was more just the people, though. I think the people is what I needed. And the people, you know, I know it's a small market, but the people always have my back.
Yeah, Carnivore, one of the best steakhouses in America. My boy Omar over there always takes care of me. And then Elsa's just a...
And then Carnivore Club.
Great wings, great post-game hangout spot, man. And that's... they just opened up Elsa's, like, my last year's here, 1984, 85 or something. And it was the livest place. I mean, it was the closest thing to New York that we had in Milwaukee. It was the hangout spot, man. So that was exciting. But now, can't let you go without you commenting on current edition of the Bucks. Giannis, your thoughts on him, watching him kind of develop as a professional, as a player.
I mean, it just speaks of the timing and work ethic. Yeah. You know, when he first came in here, they said he wasn't, you know, couldn't shoot, couldn't dribble, couldn't do anything. Now he's checked off everything off the board for everybody, what everybody said. I just hope he gets healthy. You know, right now the Bucks are, you know, down, 1-1 in the series without him. So hopefully, you know, we can take care of this first series and then get him back.
Well, watching game two, I know you were there for game two.
Mm-hmm.
What adjustments put on your coach's cap? Your Doc Jennings. What adjustments would you try and make going into game three in a hostile environment in Indianapolis?
We gotta be ruthless. Like, we gotta, like, the role players gotta be ruthless. Like, you know, role players gotta step up.
Right.
You know, you know they're gonna be trapping Dame. You know, they're gonna be sitting two, three guys at him all the time. And I think last night, like, they were killing us because we went small.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of that, and you know they adjusted. So I mean, you know, you gotta punch them in the mouth first, you know, on the road. Like, anytime you're on the road, you gotta punch the team in the mouth first. You know, the crowd's gonna go crazy. They're gonna make a run. So it's just all about how we just stick together. You know, even though Giannis is out, but we still have guys that's won championships, that's been in all these situations. So, you know, this should be nothing.
Man, one of the greatest moments for me was the post championship year victory parade.
Like
a million people out there, and you were in the vehicle in front of me. And man, every time they'd stop, you know, a throng of 10,000 people, somebody would toss you a beer or something, you opened that bad boy up, took your shirt off.
You had your shirt off too. We was on some real West Coast LA.
West Coast LA.
I had my shirt off. I was drinking like some water because, you know, I did my share of drinking.
It was off the hook.
I'm banned from drinking anymore because of the high act. But it was just, that moment, man. Yeah. For me, it was vicarious in terms of just me living through that current team, because we always got close. Lost to Dr. J in the Sixers, lost to Larry Bird in the Celtics, you know. But to see them, especially the way they did it, down 0-2 to the Nets, down 0-2 to the Suns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just how did that feel? Just being on that ride with that iteration of championship basketball.
I mean, just seeing where Milwaukee was when I first got here.
Yeah.
The Bradley Center to where it's at now, to Deer District and 50,000 people down Deer District. Like, what? Like, I would have never thought I ever see the day of that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's history. Being in the parade, you know, first of all, I didn't know that parade was that long. Like, we was in that car for a minute. I was like, all right now, like, all right, pull, like, toss me another beer. I'm gonna pass out.
Right.
Like, I ain't win it. Like, I'm just, you know. So, but no, man, just the experience, the people, being able to say, yo, I was there. You know, I've seen 50,000 people downtown Milwaukee. Like, come on, man. Like, what are we talking about? Like, this is crazy.
And quickly, what are you doing now? What's going on for Brandon Jennings right now? What kind of stuff you got going on?
Man, I'm on Gil's Arena podcast with your son, Josiah. Shout out, Josiah.
Shout out.
Gil, Lexi Brown, Rashad McKinn, Kenyon Martin, you know, everybody over there at Gil's Arena. And then I'm doing Tough Crowd. I have my collab with the Bucks this year. You know,
Tough Crowd is what? To explain that to the people.
Tough Crowd is my clothing brand that I started when I was done playing basketball. So I took a trip to China, came back, started a brand, called it Tough Crowd. And Tough Crowd is just for anybody that's an entrepreneur, anybody that wants more in life, you know, because at the end of the day, life is just a tough crowd. We always deal with haters. We're always dealing with somebody always got something to say. Right. So that's why I always say keep it hostile.
Yeah.
you know, just, you know, Tough Crowd is just my style from L.A. You know, a lot of, you know, how we used to grow up, white tees, black tees, you know, Dickies and, you know, stuff like that. So I like to keep it basic.
All right, man. Well, you know, just wish you continued success in everything you're doing. You do a great job on Gil's Arena with that crew. That's not the talk about a tough crowd between Rashad McCann's and Kenyon and Gil.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah. It gets
y'all
a little,
turned up. Y'all turned up, Lexi.
Yeah, it gets crazy. Yo, can I ask you a question though?
Yeah, please.
Man, so you know, White Man Can't Jump,
okay,
right?
Was
that scripted, or did you just do that on your own?
Which part are we talking about?
Like the whole basketball.
The gun.
Well,
right?
So
was that scripted, or did you just make that? Like,
I mean, the scene, there was a basic idea how the scene was gonna go, but Ron Shelton, the writer director, he allowed for us to, because he wasn't hip to the playground jargon and kind of how it was out there in terms of the battle and all the you know, SHIT that you talk out there. We're family show, so got to limit the cursing. We're not like Gil's Arena. N-word. Yeah. I love when Rashad McCants was talking about Luka Doncic going at all these black players.
Yeah,
I mean, if you haven't seen that I don't want to get into it too much, but that was hilarious. But to your point, but the part that I did come up with was robbing the liquor store with the mask on.
Yes.
I said, it'd be funny if I kind of went into a Mike Tyson voice, you know. So I'm like, no, this ain't Raymond. No, this ain't me. And so I just threw it out there when we shot the first take, and they loved it, and everybody laughed at it. But, man, we had a great experience. I don't know if you've done any acting, maybe something you should look into, man. You got a great look and great whole persona about you, and it's not as difficult as people make it. It's tough. Don't let me say that. It's tough. It takes some dedication. It's a craft.
Yeah.
But as you know, anything you put your time and energy into, you can you can accomplish. But we had a great time. And Wesley Snipes, great athlete, non-basketball player, three-man weaves in South Central Rancho Park near Dorsey. And if you messed up, you had to do it again. Dick Baker, coach of Loyola, was running the drills every day, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for 2 months. We had to get out there and train. And so Wesley would mess up every single time, Brandon. Three-man weave, get confused. So whoever went with his group had to go about five or six times. So it got to the point where when you were in line with Wesley or coming up on Wesley, for me, I'd always like, well, now I got to tie my shoe. Yeah, go ahead of me, man. Oh, I got to adjust my knee brace. Man, you go with Wesley, man. I'll go behind. And so Wesley finally realized what was going on. He said, okay, all right, I see what you MFs are doing. I see what y'all are doing. Just give me a couple of weeks. I'll get this stuff down. And he did. Woody Harrelson, really good playground, gym rat type basketball player. We're playing up at the Beverly Hills Y one evening, and he's doing something, and he calls a bad foul. So I was like, that ain't no foul, Woody. That's some bull crap. He's like, are you impugning my integrity? I was like, man, I went to Crenshaw. I don't know what impugning means, brother, first of all. And it was a bull crap call. He just started laughing, man. But we had the greatest time.
Man,
shoot that movie. It was more fun than work, and we had a great time. Yeah. But, man, I appreciate you stopping by the Deer District, man. Excuse me. I appreciate you stopping by. The Deer District. We start talking about the Deer District and those 50,000 got Deer District on the brain, and you're one of the most iconic figures, Bucks and Six. But just, I love the fact that keep bringing you back for different things, making you a part, keeping you a part. Let me put it that way, keeping you a part of this Bucks family because you're a big, big part of what's going on, man, and what has gone on in Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, you know the Bucks. You know, I got to thank the Bucks. You know, they're the first ones I collab with.
Okay.
You know, when it came to my brand, my clothing brand, so they opened up doors too also for me. And that's why I always tell guys in the league, man, no matter, you know, your time in the league, you know, your first, the team that you get drafted to, that's your first family, right?
Yeah.
So you want to make a good impression. You want to, you know, those people, you want to remember those people because, you know, you're going to need those people one day, you know, when you're done hooping and, you know, you want to start this company, you want to start doing this and things like that, you know, the person that you were, people are going to remember. So always be a good person.
Man, I've been working for the Bucks for 9 years doing this TV thing. You know what I mean? It's been the best 9 years of my life in terms of what I've been doing occupationally. It's just been a real godsend. And I thought I'd never come back to Milwaukee, Brandon. It's like I've been gone 30 years. It's too cold. I'm in L.A. doing a radio show in the morning. Came back to do an audition tape with Jim Paschke at the Bradley Center, and the workers were like, Marcus Johnson, we ain't seen you in 30 years. You coming back home, baby? I was like, I don't know. Maybe. And decided to sign with the Bucks and do the TV TV and 9 years ago. 9 years in, man, it's been the best thing. And like you say, it's about how you treat people on your way up, because when you're coming down, you're going to run into those same people, and they're going to remember. Yep. If you were a jerk, if you were an a-hole, you know, you're not going to have the same opportunity. So the fact that the Bucks have embraced you the way they have tells me a lot about your character and how you handled yourself as a young man, as a 19, 20-year-old man kind of thrown into this NBA lifestyle. So that's something to be commended for. And we're going to, you know, I'll get you info, man. We're going to reach out, because there's a story. There's a great story. I do a lot of screenwriting, a lot of stuff like that, me and Josiah. So there's a great story in there, man, that I think deserves to be told. So I appreciate you sharing.
We can just definitely tap in. I mean, it's a lot of people. Ah. We say PB. We got everybody. I mean, so we can go down the line.
Everybody. Yeah, and people don't really have a really clear picture of that whole LA basketball structure and the greatness of the talent that came through that area. You know, always your time and before your time, after your time. So that's definitely something worthy to be told, man. Appreciate you stopping by to hear man, and continued success, tough crowd, everything else you're doing, man. You do a great job. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.